Season 7, Episode 3, Passionate or Polemic? Alan and Trage poke the bear of workplace diplomacy with examples from politics. Alan shares a story of a city mayor who referred to a new councillor as a ranger. What's a ranger? Asks Trage. Listen to this episode to find out. Sarah challenges the notion of bland in favour of passion, and Trage elevates the vocabulary of a new word, hallmarking workplace controversy. It's polemic, he declares. Listen to more of this episode, send the podcast link to your friends, download more episodes and subscribe. Email us at hello@ywork.com.au. If you have a workplace story to share, use that email if you are keen to organise a workshop or a special release episode in your industry. Welcome to the Why Work podcast, a series of playful legal dissections on the most curious and alarming events in the world of work. The podcasters Alan Girl, Trage Svetkovsky and Sarah Pazell debate how to craft a better experience of work. Sit back, relax and enjoy. And remember, none of the things we talk about today should be construed as legal advice or any other type of advice. We're just here to talk about all things related to work.
Another media report, or it was actually a series of media reports. The facts seem to be not in dispute. And again, we're looking at leadership, but not built environment on this one.
Mm-hmm.
So in terms of leadership, the Gold Coast Mayor, Tom Tate, was at a media event, and he was asked a question by a journalist about a Facebook post, by a Queensland Member of Parliament, where he refers to a new councillor, Joe Wilkinson, as a ranger.
What's a ranger?
A ranger, it's an expression that's been around for a long time. It's referring to a person who's got red hair, and it seems to originate from orangutan, because orangutans have red hair. But
not just like flame, or, you know, not just calling him a red crayon or something. Orangutan.
It's in the same sort of bracket as ginger. So, in any event, the mayor, having been asked this question by a journalist, he said something to this effect. He said, "I didn't know he was a ranger, but it's good for diversity
to have a redhead in the business."
That was his comment. Mm. Didn't know he was a ranger, but it's good for diversity. Now, there was a complaint about that, not by Joe Wilkinson, but by someone else to the Office of Independent Assessor, and the Office of Independent Assessor is the regulatory authority for council mayors and councillors, and they determined that it was a serious matter and that they should formally investigate.
Mm-hmm.
So Gold Coast Mayor Tom Tate was in a lot of trouble because he'd referred to this new councillor as a ranger. I struggled a bit with that, probably because of my age, and I thought, you know, rangers, it's not such a label. But then I listened to Tim Mitchin's very funny song, which he calls Prejudice. You can find that on YouTube if you have a look at it. And he's talking about people with ginger hair, and only people with ginger hair can refer to other people with ginger hair as a ginger.
Right.
But he has this statement in his song, in the lyrics, which I thought was really interesting. He said, "Sticks and stones may break your bones, but words break hearts." So, interesting thought. Very interesting thought.
Yeah, it's interesting, and we'll run with this in the words matter, because in the book, and I've just right at the opening, I think one of the contestants repeatedly, and on more than one occasion, another contestant may have talked about, "Oh, look, you know, I think I have OCD. Oh, I must have OCD because the way I arrange my pantry." Now, it's a diagnosed condition, and so
are you polemic about your pantry?
No, this so polemic about this, but the fact that we've incorporated everyday usage like ranga, or you must have OCD, and I'm building up to what our Prime Minister had to retract this week, for those of you who didn't hear what he said on record. And so, so concerned the association for those who suffer from OCD, that there are ways to mitigate the social acceptance of OCD being a joke by actually joking, or at least somehow how to manage when somebody jokes about OCD. And, you know, people do get triggered by, for example, if it was ranga, why in the popular culture environment, why popularise OCD? Or worse, in the political environment, why accuse someone of having Tourette's across the bench?
Oh, right. Is that so? Explain that.
It's not appropriate.
Explain that, Trish, to everybody.
So this week, the Prime Minister of Australia was a bit annoyed by the crossbench, because obviously, you know, that's the point of Parliament. They natter, they say things, they argue.
Very polemic arguments.
In Parliament, yes.
Sometimes just pointless arguments.
And but can the be thing very is, rude
and obnoxious.
Aggressive.
So you couldn't quite hear but they were baiting him or goading him. They were doing something. So clearly the Prime Minister was annoyed, because it's all on footage, and he turned around and he said, "Have you got Tourette's or something?" And, of course, a couple of people in the back bench sort of didn't know whether to laugh or not laugh.
Awkward.
So, unfortunately, you've raised someone at the lowest tier of government, i.e. the councils, and then somebody at the highest tier of government, who is the leader of the government, who is the leader of the country. Just he obviously apologised and retracted, and he said it meant nothing by it, etc. But the point is, it's often said without any... Yeah, it's almost embedded.
So in the case of the Gold Coast Mayor, he meant no harm comment.
And no harm was taken by the new
councillor. But a third party who heard the conversation was upset. And I think that's the real point. Risk for leaders. Leaders are often heard by many people.
Okay, and yet I just watched an interesting segment of a podcast analysing Trump's popularity in America, right? Mm. And the argument was that people are so tired of in the grey, not offending anyone, but not really standing for anything too strongly, politicians. The fact that Trump has thrown out the rule book on proper behaviours, shall we say, and has just gone, I'm going as raw and as blunt and as opinionated as I can. That contrast is appealing to people who are tired of feeling like otherwise the only thing they subscribe to is a very bland, stand for not quite anything type of politician. Mm. So there's a risk in not being polemic and passionate and just being able to be a little bit, you know, who you are and what you want to believe in and how that expressed when somebody else then uses that as a vulnerability, because you're just too grey, too much of a politician, right?
Yeah,
so it's interesting about this is Anthony's, how do you say his name? Scaramucci.
Oh, yeah.
Who used to be his press person. Scaramucci?
Trump's different. Trump will just say anything like for a rise. No, that's
correct. That's his position, because everyone else is just too scared to get a rise,
But the thing is, our politicians, by comparison, are that vanilla. They are grey. They are bland. So my point is, you're comparing apples and oranges. I guess what all I'm suggesting is simply, before you say it, just get that internal voice to go, you know what? Just stop for a second before you say it.
I think it's very hard for leaders, though, because they're caught on the fly.
I know. But, you know, I would still suggest there's got to be a little bit of internalization before you start. I mean...
Well, why don't we ask the expert?
Anthony Scaramucci. Thank you.
For example, I want to ask the expert.
Yeah.
I want to ask the expert.
Who's the expert?
Sarah.
Oh, am I the expert in this
Dr.
now?
Yes, Dr. Pazell.
All right,
what should one do to try and improve...
He's a doctor too.
I've been a doctor a lot longer. If you want to compare size.
So if you...
I think we're talking about tenure,
so,
darling.
if you had an organisation...
Love me, tenure.
If you had an organisation that had a strong history and used a lot of ochre language,
mate,
and you wanted to make the culture and the language used by the members of that business more sensitive. Come on, it's not built environment, but it's culture.
It is culture. Culture. It is culture. That's a big one, isn't it? There's a lot of, and that's what I think you mentioned it on one of our previous recordings in season six, Alan, about how so many business leaders got in trouble in the 1990s because suddenly laws changed and yet their past work performance.
Well, I think
you know, it's still embedded in their behaviors. It's habitual, like you've just talked about. It's just happened from childhood behaviors, and they and when they didn't even realize this was wrong, and so suddenly they go back to past habits and culture.
Yeah.
You know.
Well, so, I'd guess that older leaders, and it's just a guess, but I'd guess that older leaders are more vulnerable to using language that was acceptable.
That was previously acceptable, and now feeling like it's just way too sensitive. Way too. What do they say? Woke culture. Is that the argument?
But put that aside. And yeah, they do. I can get annoyed a bit by that woke stuff. But no, I'm getting back to really basic stuff. Like, for example, if there is an urge, and this is what seems to be happening on record by those in leadership, whether they've got orange hair or not. If you see someone, now I know, for example, I'm not going to blurt out, "You fat bastard."
Mm-hmm.
Like, as in Austin, remember Austin Powers? Remember Fat Bastard?
Yes, my point is,
all I'm suggesting for this episode is that internal radar is not about being woke. So, for example, if I see someone who's...
How do you be polemic but make sure that you don't
hurt the feelings of the other person?
How do you make sure to use Tim's words, you don't break their heart?
Yeah, I love that.
That is lovely. That is a lovely quote.
For me, my strategy is I have that internal voice. I may think someone is none of it should matter. Correct. Mm-hmm. So then why are we hearing things such as ranger or if you...
Tourette's.
Fancy saying to your colleague, you got Tourette's or something. The more I think about it, or, you know, I must have OCD because I arranged my pantries. There is someone here who is now pacing those steps back and forth, who is on medication.
Of course.
And that's the part. Come on, have we lost our way to just filter? I think we've lost our way to filter. The internet's done a lot to do that.
I think it's the art of being polemic.
Yes, you can be civil and polemic.
A combination of mentoring and training and education, you know, you want to, but I guess I'm saying that must be coupled with policies and systems and job design where you have that support from an organizational practice rather than only relying on behaviors. But of course, it has to be open.
I've got a better way. Prosecute.
I've got my concerns about that.
Prosecute!
You, of course, would be familiar with the expression restorative justice.
Yes, yes.
Knock on their doors.
Go ahead and explain. Talk about that, Alan.
Well, with all of these areas of law, we don't have a system that requires the person who's hurt and the person who caused the hurt to come together.
Yes.
So the person who's hurt can say, "You really hurt me."
Bingo.
And so the person who hurt the other person can say, "I'm sorry that I hurt you."
And it's so much more powerful in education that way, isn't it? When you can demonstrate that and show that and explain how and why. Because I think with some of those throwaway comments, people are not aware. It didn't sound like
intended to hurt.
Words matter. Remember, close your legs, cross your legs. Let's get state government involved. Do you hear about the close your legs, cross your legs?
Tell us about
that got all legal.
Tell us all about it. Tell us about it.
There was people are all heated. They're in parliament. One parliamentary member allegedly said something to do with etiquette.
Okay.
And so there is a big difference between the terms cross your legs and close your legs. There's an ocean of difference in those two phrases.
So it was said to a woman?
A fellow parliamentarian. And, of course, that person's taken offence to say, "Take that back." No, I'm not taking that back. And then, of course, it got onto Facebook. So our viewers can Google that. In fact, can you Google that? It's close your legs, cross your legs, state, Queensland government. That's what you need to do. You got to love Google. But my point is people do get hurt, do get offended. So before you shoot, your six shooter and, because words are powerful and words do matter.
Break hearts.
You could break someone's heart, hurt someone's feeling. And you know what? The more I think about it.
But we need a system of law that mends the heart, that doesn't just punish the person who broke their heart.
It's a total affair of the heart. And you've taken us down to Funky Town.
This was not that long ago. This is 2024.
Yeah, it was a couple of weeks.
May. Queensland opposition MP Ross Bates caused outrage in Parliament. Again, I'm just reading news.
This is straight out of the news. We don't make this stuff up.
But if it's reported accurately, they yelled, "Cross your legs" in question time. Labour Health Minister Shannon Fentiman wrongly accused her of yelling, "Close your legs." Yeah. Parliamentary Hansard quotes her as saying, "Cross your legs."
But here's the thing. So this slight inexactation or this slight misinterpretation can set things off.
And but why would you tell someone to cross their legs anyway versus close your legs?
We can deconstruct that. We can unpack it. But the point is, and I know in the heat of the moment people say things, but these people are at the top of the top. They're leaders.
It's hard to understand why that remark was made.
So I'm struggling. Now, remember, I've voted for these people, not those people specifically, but as a constituent, I voted for those leaders to be...
Are you saying you voted for politicians? Because if you didn't, you broke the law.
My point is, these are the leaders of the leaders, getting back to that apex right to the very beginning. And I want value for money.
Well, I think when you're talking about this aspect of intervention, you're talking about some very high-profile case. People are caught on film. And, Alan, you spoke more about in the workplace and what would you do. You gave the example of restorative justice. But I think when it's unintentional and it's a situation where probably out of ignorance, it seems like it's much nicer to mentor both people and have some private one-on-one conversations too, some asides, right?
Yeah,
just to say, are you even aware that this might have caused this harm?
And that was an aspirational remark by me. The reality is, in most workplaces, if there's a formal complaint, that the person who makes the complaint and the person who the complaint is made about will never have the opportunity to have that discussion, which I think is really sad, but that's the way the legal system works at the moment.
So you need to focus on impact, not intent, right? Because people always defend themselves on intent, but it's like, hang on, you need to understand the impact of that.
Yeah, so I just kind of think, when people say rethink your second drink, rethink your next word. And who's mentoring the leaders of the leaders? This is the part that spooks me. When the printer junior says something inappropriate to a work colleague, they're going to have to be schooled up and mentored. I guess I'm a little less forgiving for those who are paid a lot. Hang on, let me emphasise that. A lot of money. And then...
And public representation. I mean, because you think you want to be...
high standards. I just do. Yeah.
There's some lovely mentoring programs and language used in schools for both primary and high school students where the same sorts of values could be learned and addressed for adults. But when somebody is in that influential position you would hope that they actually have already been aware of that need for that type of protocol. But at the same time, what's the mission? Are they trying to be controversial because it advances that company mission? In which case, the rule book goes out the window. I just gave the example when the rule book goes out of the window.
No, Trump's out of the box. Like that's just
Scaramucci he's dissecting this really well. He's got this interesting podcast that dissects this now, and it's like, wow, okay.
Yeah, I mean, America's a fertile ground for that. I mean, it's
fertile
one
ground
four.
For a lot. Yeah,
they're really heightened. They're impassioned. In Australia, it's a different ball game. It's not intentional. Like when the previous Prime Minister made the remark about he thanks, his lucky stars or words to that effect, that he doesn't have disabled children. That hurt a lot of people.
Yeah.
That hurt a lot of people.
Yep.
You can Google that remark. It was, he didn't mean it. He didn't do it for ratings. That's far from it. As opposed, neither would someone have said, close your legs or cross your legs or you got Tourette's or whatever. But before you say it, stop. And think we're missing that.
I think also there needs to be some sort of a little bit of patience on the graduated way that culture will change too, that there has to be some appreciation that it does take a little bit of time here, right? Well, and it's not going to be instant and overnight, but definitely the difficult conversations must be had.
Yeah, because the time is now. I mean, there's a dialogue already about how are neurodivergent workers, for example, how is this concept being understood and how are policies implemented? It's here because
It's yesterday
because the psychosocial code's been around for a while. And my understanding of it is, considerations, you know, remember the word positive, proactive actions, that has to be accommodated, not gradually now, or else they could fall foul of a prosecution, an improvement notice.
That's a big red flag. If you're getting a improvement or a prohibition notice,
that's another point.
Yes.
It is a red flag, yet people aren't seeing improvement notices as red flags. They're huge.
Mm. I guess it depends, I'm meaning in the nature, depending on what it is when you have this workplace that needs to change, right? But, I mean, we have that recent example, again, just news media, of that young apprentice.
Oh.
And you know what I'm talking about, right?
Oh, where the toolbox.
Their manager made them ride in the back of the ute in the toolbox. And the mum got wind of it eventually when her other son, who was working on a construction site, I believe, saw his younger brother have to crawl out, cramped, overheated, from the toolbox while the guys were sharing a stubby, which is a beer from his friends in America, laughing about it as he gets out of the toolbox. Now, again, it's only news media that I'm responding to.
Oh, no, it's okay.
Let me describe it for our listeners.
Thanks.
So we in Australia talk about utilities or utes.
Utility vehicle, like a low pickup.
Yeah, so
it's Americans a low pickup.
Talk about pickups,
trucks. I don't know. We've pimped ours right up now. Remember our previous episode we talked about the Ram and the Ranger.
Yes.
So it could be a low utility or a truck, basically, for folks in America.
And so this particular one they had.
Yes.
What is common in Australia is you'll get a stainless steel toolbox on either side. So imagine the tray's divided into thirds, and you'll have a toolbox on one side, a toolbox on the other, and there'll be a void, an open bit in the middle. And that's where this apprentice was positioned. So he was between the two
toolboxes. I thought it was actually in the toolboxes.
No, he was between the toolbox.
But wedged. So he was wedged.
I thought he was in the toolbox.
There. No. He's sitting on a hard metal floor. Mm. And if there was an accident, of course, he'd have very little protection.
And I think the report said there were loose tools in their back.
That was considered as an
extra interacting hazards.
Well, yes, that's right. And also, we're also talking about here where, I don't know how long ago you'd have to go, but once upon a time, that might be considered something that would happen. There's plenty of kids riding in the back of utes on farms.
The matter was prosecuted. They were fined. Okay. Can we bring it up? I've got it. I've got the decision. The matter involved, I think it was a magistrate's court case. I think it was like a risk-based prosecution.
Be on that table.
A Mansfield plumber has been fined $20,000 for driving a utility vehicle. While his apprentice was in the vehicle's rear, it says in the rear toolbox. In the toolbox.
I'm pretty sure I saw a photograph of the vehicle.
That some tools had been left loose in the toolbox and there was a risk of serious injury or death. So everything I'm reading says in the toolbox. And it says again, risk here, Victorian tradie fined after apprentice forced to ride in the utility toolbox.
See if you can get a picture of it. The look, and what we're seeing in all states of Australia, but in particular in Queensland, is lots and lots more prosecutions of employees. Statistically, it's undeniable. So, in fact, in Queensland, we see more prosecutions. We see over half of the prosecutions of companies is prosecutions of individuals. So we're seeing a very large percentage of prosecutions of individuals.
Yes, and in fact, you've just caused me to reflect on something. The very last case I did before starting here at ACU involved the prosecution of a worker who used a work tool to injure another worker as a joke for laughs, for giggles. And they were prosecuted. I thought it was an assault and it should have been a matter dealt with by the police. However, we do have provision. The PCBU, the person conducting the business undertaking, was not prosecuted because this occurred during a break, like a smoko, as we call them here in Australia. And that worker thought he would assert his authority over the younger worker and cause second-degree burns by spraying. It's like a freezing agent. It sets the plastic moulding. Oh. So he sprayed this worker on the back of his leg. This was on the Sunshine Coast. And he said, ow, what'd you do that for? He goes, well, what, can't you take an effing joke? Ha ha. So he's reported this to his supervisor and his mum because he's visibly upset and distressed. Parents got involved and the matter came to my desk and I ended up issuing a section provision against the worker pursuant to Section 28.
Which is?
So Section 28 is that a worker, an employee.
The duty of workers, yeah. Yep.
And that was really important because it also sent a strong message. In any other universe, that would have been a straight-out bullying and, you know, some type of harassment, however, or an assault, let's call it what it is. But it wasn't related to the work duties of that particular organisation. So the entity was left alone.
So it's an interesting topic. Mm. The workers have a duty to exercise reasonable care, but we don't have much judicial guidance on what the phrase reasonable care means.
No. And sorry to correct you, Alan, but The apprentice was in the toolbox. The apprentice recorded a video commenting on the heat inside and his discomfort.
Goodness.
He was red-faced, hunched over. He had to crawl out of the toolbox. It was a toolbox large enough for a person to actually be in. He was in the actual body of the closed toolbox. And there were two spare seats in the actual utility truck.
So
in the cab that he wasn't allowed to sit in.
It's almost suggestive of some type of like hazing or a prank or some hazing, type of, you
which
know,
used to be so common too, right?
You're the young fellow. We'll sort you out. I know we've talked about this ad nauseum on this show, but it's always worth revisiting because
it keeps happening.
So words keep getting uttered. That's the word I was looking for all morning. Utter. I'm sorry. But you don't, when you're in a position of absolute power, and I emphasise absolute, particularly when you're the PM.
No one is ever in a position of absolute power.
Oh, pretty absolute. Significant power. We won't say absolute. I don't think, and I know, again, I'm on my high horse, I don't think you're entitled to utter publicly. Privately, you can say whatever you like. I'm not the thought police. This isn't 1984 yet. However, you just can't utter. Now, apprentices doing stupid things, carrying on like fools, let's rehabilitate them. Let's send them off to one of Sarah's special be a good person design or else you're going to go to Trajan's Gulag if you don't. So, but when you get to the top, when you see this whole episode is about authenticity and leaders at the apex, right? Not middle management, not workers. I don't think you're entitled to utter.
I mean, I hope I
get a reaction from our listeners.
We see sports heroes as well who are held to account because, hang on, children are looking up to you now. So wait, mate, there's a different decorum, different public behaviour that needs to be on display now.
Public is the key word. Nah, sorry, my standards are too high. I'm paying good coin for these people through my taxes. And boy, am I paying through my taxes. So no uttering.
Well, the trend is to prosecute the individual.
All right.
Which is problematic because that doesn't really solve anything, does it?
Yes, it does. A statistic is made. Annual reports look good. All right.
We hope you enjoyed that episode of Why Work. You've been listening to Trage, Sarah and Alan. And if you'd like to know more about some of the things we've talked about today, please subscribe and we'd be more than happy to provide you with information, names of cases and other things that may interest you. Please be aware that none of the matters we've talked about today should be construed as legal advice or any other type of advice. We're just here to talk about all things related to work. See you next time.